Hi, everybody. I'm Karen. I'm an alcoholic.
Hello, Karen.
I'm Beth. I'm an alcoholic.
Hello, Beth.
I may or may not have completely forgotten it was Saturday or Sunday. Hey, I don't know what day it is. I was sitting here. I told her I had this feeling like I just saw her like sitting on her couch, hanging out. I text her, you coming? I get, oh my gosh, I'm coming. And then my husband had my keys and he couldn't find them.
Oh, yeah, that had to be pretty.
So right? I just looked at him and I'm like, find your set of keys.
Yeah.
So we're here.
Yeah.
We are here.
Step five.
Yeah, step five. So we've gone through the first four.
Yeah, so the whole premise of this run through the steps is no matter where you are at in your process, to lean in further. I had a week. Karen
you
knows.
Had a week.
I had a week. So I went in for a procedure and found out afterwards that they put fentanyl in my system. I didn't get high. It totally was not even a freebie.
Like, bummer.
Such a bummer.
I mean, you know.
That's my boss.
About this brain thing.
Right?
You know, you're
even my boss. Even my boss. She knows me well. And she's all, oh my God, so like a freebie? I'm like, no, it's knocked out. So I didn't even, it wasn't even, it sucks. But anyway, so for like 3 days, was it 3 days?
Mm-hmm.
3-4 days, I was a raving lunatic. I went from being sobbing, crying, to completely insecure, to an egomaniac, to rageful, angry, to sobbing and pathetic, self-pity. Like, I was on this like roller coaster, so I wound up taking a bunch of days off, which was totally cool, but then I woke up on Saturday, and it's so interesting. Like, even just now when we're sitting in the 2 minutes of meditation, I have so much gratitude to grow towards God right now. Because those 3 days were like an active alcoholic was living in my body, I guess, as the fentanyl, like, detox from my body, like, whatever happened, like, and they did not tell me they were going to do this. Afterwards, I'm like, why would you put fentanyl inside of me? And they said, well, you don't have access to it. And if I wasn't coming out of anesthesia, my next statement would have been, that's not the effing question I just asked you. I have so much gratitude for my recovery today. And if you don't think that I still have 28 years sober, that's cool with me. I don't really care. I had to come to a comfortability with that in the last 24 hours that I really don't care what anybody else thinks about me anymore. I have so much so much gratitude for my recovery in this moment because I was so unrecovered Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. And Saturday? No, Friday.
Yeah, Saturday.
Saturday I saw you guys, yeah. And in this moment, I am so grateful for wanting to be connecting further in with my God. So as we go through this, no matter where you are, whether you've been through the steps, you've never been through the steps, and this is your first time, my suggestion to you is, hey, is to lean in. And if you don't want to say it, say it. And if you don't want to write it, just write it. Like, I promise you, you will not burst into flames, and neither will any of us. And everything's going to be okay because everything's already okay. If you have been through the process, push through and write more. Say more. Feel more. Pray more. Lean in and do things that you would never do because it was dumb. Or never do because you were like, I don't have to do that. Like, lean in. Like, what's the worst that can happen is you have the exact same experience you're already having. And I can tell you that my experience is that anytime I've leaned into anything, I have a deeper experience. So we did step one. We are powerless over, literally, I am experiencing this again. We are powerless over substances once they're put in our bodies, and we have no control on whether or not we're going to pick up again. That no matter what you think of how good a big book program you work, it's not keeping you sober. It's a quality of life issue. God keeps us sober. That's the end all and be all of this concept of the 12 steps in the big book. Second step is leaning in to get to know our higher power. And, you know, where am I agnostic in my life? Like, what areas of my life? My understanding and my experience of myself and every woman I've ever worked with is that we are agnostic in some area of our life always. If we weren't, we'd be God and perfect, and I'm definitely not, as seen by me being late today again. In that third step, right, the short answer is you make a decision to do this process. is the shortest possible thing I can say about the third step. You make a decision that you're going to do whatever it takes to get through this process, even if you don't understand what it takes to get through this process. In an inventory last week, we talked at length about resentment inventory, fear inventory, harms, sex and harms.
Mm-hmm.
And this week, we're going to talk about five and maybe even get through six and seven. Although I could talk about step six and seven for like 5 years straight. It's my favorite step because it
works. Well, we're 12 weeks. That's it.
Oh. So we're definitely not going to do that. But the reason I love six and seven so much is because it's like the biggest bang for your buck and you don't even have to do anything. Like, it's really awesome. Mm-hmm. It's like my kind of step work.
None of that made sense, or if all of that made sense, like that whole like lean in, whether you understand it or not, that we just really keep encouraging you to do that. I usually find more growth and more understanding when I'm leaning in, when I don't know what I'm leaning in about. Because when I know something, then I'm trying to control it and dictate it and figure out where I'm supposed to be starting. And of course, that means I know where I'm supposed to be ending. So if I just am kind of blind about it and just lean in and let the process happen, that's when the most growth comes. And I usually don't have much of a choice because every time I pick up the big book, it says something different to me in a different way. So,
yeah.
Okay, chapter six, into action. Not into feelings, into action.
Damn it.
Yeah, we've been talking a lot about that, about how we feel and what we do with those feelings, and especially when you're doing that fourth, you know, that fourth step and writing all that down. At least for me, it was like, oh my God, I get to complain about everybody and express every feeling I've ever had. But it's a program of action. In this chapter, this is where we are at, boy. So you want to start taking us through, or you want me to, or?
Well, I mean, you know.
Do you want to just jump around a little bit, or?
Sure. Do you have something, or? I'm just looking at, okay, this requires action on our part, which then, when completed, will mean that we've admitted to God, to ourselves, and another human being, the exact nature of our defects. This brings us to the fifth step in the program of recovery mentioned in the preceding chapter. And then it goes on to kind of talk about, like, why are we doing this? And the reality is that the book tells us you're going to drink. If you skip this vital step, you're probably going to drink. My experience is that I've seen a couple of people go out in four, but I've seen most people blow their lives up by not going through this step, that they don't actually take a drink, that they actually wind up shutting parts of their soul down again so that they're in untreated alcoholism, which means they've taken their will back in more areas, which means there's more agnosticism, which means there's more control, more managing, less powerlessness, and they're actually reeling it all in out of fear of just moving forward. And so, I don't like to throw the word "you're gonna drink" around because I've been worse sober than I was drinking, and I did not pick up a drink. You'd be shocked at how far your ego will go to say, "Well, you're not drinking.
You're fine. This.
Listen, if your justification for anything is ever, "What? I'm not drinking," you should probably hit like a hard pause and like just go home, lock the door, and start calling alcoholics and go, "This is bad. This is really bad." It's not easy. Five is never easy. I do not like sharing about myself.
And for me, it was, I was all about ego and shame and guilt. So it was so humbling to me. And I also thought I was the worst alcoholic and, no disrespect, drug addict there ever was. And almost didn't appreciate people having stories like mine because, like, if you did what I did, then you do what I do kind of thing. And it just wasn't that unique. And it was humbling to me. And it was interesting. I was thinking about this today when last time I did this step, I had written out, done the work, and this was before I hooked up with Beth. I was going to meet my sponsor, and there was one thing that was just too shameful that I guess I couldn't put down on paper. And as I was driving there, I got scared and I literally pulled off to the side of the road and got out my tablet and wrote it down. Do you know I do not remember what that was? I tried so hard today to think of what that was. But that's like how sick your secrets keep you and how huge it felt at that time. And I mean, all the other stuff I'd done, I mean, I pages, but some, and I, honest to God, but that's how enormous that was in my life and how much power it had in my life. And that I can sit here today and say, I don't even know what it was. Mm-hmm. Tells you, but oh, if I wouldn't have shared it, I'd have been able to tell you what it was. So there's a lot of freedom in that. And I, you know, I was a lot of a facade, and this step was taking that away from me, taking that mask off, just being who I was. And that's all about that leaning in, because to be my authentic self, first of all, I didn't know what that was, and that was so scary to me. You know, if you knew what went on inside of me, if you knew who I really was and all of that, I mean, just all these you know, Beth talked about it last time, all this talk that goes on in our head, oh my God, I just had myself... just this horrible, horrible person. And when I did the fifth step, it just wasn't that big of a deal, which is probably was the worst thing for me, because I really thought I was that big of a deal, if that makes sense to anybody. It like burst my bubble. And that's when my relationship with God really started at a different place, because it put, like, everybody was on the same playing field for me. So it was pretty powerful stuff. But no, did I like it? God, no.
No. Mm-mm. I mean, and I think that if you really take a step back and lean in, is ask yourself, what is so scary? I can tell you personally for me that, you know, in my core, I feel like I'm not worth it. I'm not good enough. I'm not worthy of God's love. I'm not worthy of healing. I'm not worthy of, you know, being heard. I don't want to be seen, because I'm afraid you're going to see me and be like, that was dumb. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I am very comfortable being dismissed. I am very comfortable with being told no. Maybe that's why I'm good at marketing. I have pride, but pride is not my obstacle. I have ego. Ego is not my obstacle. I have self-hatred, self-loathing, which puts me on a level of constantly being better than or worse than, because I have to fit on the scale somewhere. And when I sit down with my sponsor or whoever I do my fifth step with, it's leveling the playing field. Mm-hmm. I've never had anybody hear my fifth step and be like, holy crap.
You're a mess.
You're a mess. Yeah. I have normal people in the real world who I'm not telling my fifth step to. They tell me I'm a hot mess. But during my inventory, I'm not. I'm just as valid as every other human being on this planet. And it puts things in perspective. I always feel relief after my fourth step. I'm always very gung-ho to get my eighth step cards written after a fifth step, because I see that my actions did not match my intentions, that never one time in my entire life have I been vindictively mean, maybe once or twice, but in general, I've never just been a vindictively mean person. I don't do things to harm people. So when I find out why I harmed them was because I was not connected to my higher power in the way that I wish to be, or I was unable to respond and was only able to react, I'm very, very willing after my fifth step to go write my eighth step cards. On the other side of that, as a sponsor, you know, there's lots of ways of going through the work, and I applaud every single one of them. And there's, you know, I take my girls through slowly. On average, it usually takes me about a year to get through to the ninth step. We read the lines, we chat once a week, they come to my house once a week, we meet. So by time we've gotten to step five, I've done a ton of listening, even though if my girls don't think so. And so when they bring that fifth step to me, my job as a sponsor in a fifth step is to create a safe space for them to have an experience, their own personal experience, but it's also my responsibility to bring the remainder of what they may have not brought to the table. And so by time we're sitting down and we're doing the fifth step and we're going over a resentment against mom, I remember the eight different times. And, dude, for the life of me, I can't remember any conversation I've ever had unless I'm sitting in a fifth step and then they're just all right there. So that's God. Mm-hmm. But I remember the eight conversations where I put together at some point, or God put inside of me at one point, that this wasn't really about mom. It was about the husband, or it was about... you know, it was about something else, right? And it's funny, too, because as we go through the columns, it'll start to suss out, and I can say, let's take a pause and take a step back and ask ourselves, who is this resentment really about? And by the time we get to that fourth column, eighth column, whatever you want to call it, it's pretty clear to both of us. I'm not above saying things like, did you hear what you just said? Did you hear the words that just came out of your mouth? No, because 5 times out of 10 they didn't. And my responsibility is to maintain complete honesty with the person that's sitting in front of me, because that's what they've asked me to do. And I will repeat back to them, or I will say, read back that last column again and really hear what you're saying.
So like a safe place, a safe mirror to look at what you're really saying, because like up to this point, you know, what did I know about honesty? And rigorous honesty, I mean, anything that I went for, it was to get something or to get you to do something or to make me feel better. So to sit down with another human being in a safe place and share my story honestly and yeah. openly to the best of my ability at that time is a whole new concept, a whole new playing field, because there's mm-hmm. like no ulterior motive there.
Yeah.
There's nothing for her to gain when I do, you know, it's just for, so that like in itself is completely different. And then saying it out loud, you know, things can make perfect sense in my head. They start looking a little funny on paper. So usually I'll just write more, but then when I say them out loud and then I can even say them out loud if nobody's listening and still get them to kind of make sense. But when someone else is listening to them and they're really, and it, my thoughts are really distorted or my resentments or my blame, that's when the perspective starts coming into play. I can give you an example of that. You know, the guy that I live with, Fred. We all know it's Fred.
Fred!
His ex-wife, you know, hated me. Oh, God, and had never met me. So my resentment list was huge on her. She says all these things about me. She does. She won't be around me. She doesn't even know me. She makes it hard on the kids. I mean, oh, I just, and you can see my face kind of goes, I could go on and on about that. So as I was doing this, and I got to that last column, and I didn't have it written at the time, my responsibility, I had really struggled, like, with what was my part. She didn't even know me. She had never even met me. So, like, I had a hard time even writing what I was accountable for, as shocking as that may seem. But as I was saying it out loud, it was like, oh, my God. You know, when you talk about God being with you in this process, it was like, this is a woman that I have relapsed twice. And her children have been totally affected by that and have been involved in that relapse and have had their lives devastated by that, because I live with their father. They are involved in our lives. And the incidences that happened when I went out were not pretty and were pretty public. So it was like, oh my gosh, this is a mother protecting her children. I mean, I couldn't have seen that in that situation for anything. And it was there, oh my gosh, this makes perfect sense. I wouldn't want me around my kids either. So those are I've had a lot of those experiences, but that's where like saying it out loud and bringing God into the conversation, things I'm just not capable of finding in my life.
Yeah. I think one of the things to take into consideration when doing your fifth step is we don't mix well with others, period. We don't do vulnerability, period. We don't expose ourselves well. We don't deal with change well. Like, we're incredibly sensitive. Like, this is who we are as a population, and obviously on varying degrees for all of us. But in general, this is who we are as a population. And you've asked us, the book's asked us to take all of our most intimate information and dump it out in front of another one of us. That just doesn't sound like a great idea. In fact, oh my God, when I was in therapy, my husband and I went to therapy and our marriage blew up because I was dry drunk and whatever. And so like we're putting our marriage back together and like we tell the marriage therapist we're going to do a ninth step this weekend. And she's like, oh, what is that? And she's an excellent therapist. No clue what we do. And Dan and I both are like, well, we both like make amends and we say everything that we did wrong in the relationship and we take responsibility for it. And she was like, yeah, that doesn't sound like a good idea. She goes, I'm going to go out on a limb. And I goes, that actually sounds like a bad idea. And we both chuckled, right? We just both laughed. We're like, we've done this before. We got it, right? I need to get in touch with her and tell her we're still married. She'll be really shocked. Anyway, but remember that this is really what's going on. There's two different types of people when it comes to walking into your fifth step. There's the person that gets completely scared and backs off and tries to find an excuse and reschedules. And then there's idiots like me that don't consider any of that at all and just show up on time the first time and sit down and start getting dry mouth. Because you're just like, I can't tell you I'm sick right now. You're sitting right in front of me. and want to lie in your fifth step because you get there and you're like slapped in the face with it. So I promise you, I've never said my fifth step and I've never heard a fifth step where there was a bad outcome. I can tell you that if you're working with somebody that's going through the book and you're going through this process with them, I promise you they're the same person when you sit down and do your fifth step that they were at the fourth step, that they were at the third step, that they were the day that they met you. They're the same person that picks up the phone every time you call that says, what do you need? I promise you it's going to be okay. And lean in and share, right? Share every twist of character. I can tell you what you don't. There's a difference between keeping some of the behaviors I had towards my mom that I'm aware of off of the inventory because they were really bad and I don't want anybody to know that I pushed my mom down the stairs, and it not coming to light inside of me or remembering that I pushed my mom down the stairs. That fact of information didn't come out until my third or fourth inventory because I literally didn't remember. But there's a very big consequence. There's a very big difference in consequence. Now, I don't get to grow from learning all of the ins and outs about what happened about me pushing my mom down the stairs because I didn't know about it. But there are consequences of knowing I did it and not bringing it to the table. These things become the corroding thread inside of us. Do you know how it feels when you're out there and you don't want to see Joe? And so maybe we just don't go to Stop and Shop because I'm pretty sure he goes there. And in fact, I might go to the ShopRite in, I don't know, Hudson County because Joe lives in Mercer County and it's a little close. And this will start to happen to you inside of yourself with a delusional lie if you don't bring things to the table that you're aware of. It becomes a corroding thread to your spiritual abilities. It becomes a corroding thread to your relationship with your God. I can tell you this because I've done it. So if you've done it, fix it tonight. Call anybody. If you can get in touch with their sponsor, do it.
Tell them.
Just tell them. If you want to call one of your spiritual sisters or one of your spiritual brothers or somebody that you trust in this program, just do it. Get it. Get rid of it right now because it will corrode your ability to enjoy your freaking life. Like, I don't know about you, but I spent like the first 10 years and I went through the book at 6 trying to be a good girl, trying to get the approval of my God, trying to get the approval of my boss, trying to get the approval of all these different things around me, and it would keep me from having a genuine experience. It kept me from bringing things or not bringing things into my inventory. Stop now. The only one that's paying the price is you. The only one that paid the price was me. And when I started to practice this program in the moment, in this way, when it comes to the table, I'm going to bring it in. If it comes into thought, I'm going to write it down. I'm going to fifth step it with my sponsor.
I mean, and you can't know what you don't know. So it's exactly. Like, you know, you've done the work up. You've done 1 through 4. I mean, this God that you have taken this step 3 and turn your life over to, it's not going to bring you through, you know, bring you to it, not to bring you through it. So it's like, here again, just trusting that process. And if it comes up, then, you know, down on the paper it goes. And if it doesn't, then it will. But, you know, there's all kinds, and I think Beth's hit on it really well. I mean, dangers of keeping stuff inside and how it corrodes your life. You know, it's like one little secret. It's the same way with one little lie. If I keep one thing in, then I make it okay to keep another thing in. And then it's a bigger secret, and then that isn't so bad. And pretty soon my life is just corroded, is filled with secrets again. And if you're very shame-based like I was, those secrets keep that shame alive. They literally just feed it and feed it and feed it. And me, as a shameful woman, is going to pick up somewhere along the line. I had to be free of that. And I didn't know how to do that. I mean, the steps worked for me in spite of me. Mm-hmm. Because I had supposedly done them and been in the rooms and had time, and you don't know me, and I've done this, and I still went back out. And it wasn't until I, you know, did it like somebody suggested that I do it, that things started to change, mm-hmm. because I always thought I knew best. So for me, the fear of whatever was going to happen in my fifth step was not as big as what the fear was for what was waiting for me out there. That was, you know, and I had made the commitment with Beth when I showed up at her doorstep. She said, "Are you willing to go to any lengths?" And I said, "Yes, I am." And when I balked, she would remind me of that. You know, and it wasn't about being the good girl, because I always wanted to be the good girl and be her favorite sponsee. Love me, love me, love me. Yes, Becca, love me more than Becca. You know, I mean, and don't think that crap didn't go through my head for 1 minute. And then maybe if I'm like Becca, she'll like, oh my God, it's just so twisted. And Beth just kept pushing me to God, you know, really, because I, you know, she really was pushing me away. But it was all about not this, you know, because I wanted to be Beth dependent, and she was just, go to God, go to God, go to God. And, you know, there isn't one thing I've taken to this God of mine that he can't handle. Sometimes I think I'm bigger and larger than life, but here again, leveling field. I'm not, you know, all the right down
worker
here.
Among, right, worker mm-hmm. among workers. Mm-hmm. Can I tell you, I was always afraid of being a worker among workers. And now that I fit into that model, no matter whether I'm sitting with a homeless person or the CEO.
Doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. It's so comforting to just be me all the time. Like, all the time. Mm-hmm. Like, I accidentally yelled at my boss's boss this week. I was totally, no, I wasn't justified at all. I think it was the fentanyl. But anyway. But I'm just me all the time. I don't have so much awesomeness in my life that I don't have any energy, not even 1% of my energy can go to wasting, putting on a shield or putting on a mask or pretending to be something I'm not, because something will fall. God's got so much going on around me that he's asked me to just show up for, that if I put any sort of self-protection on, my energy is zapped for the day. I need to take a week off.
And you're also blocking that sunlight of the spirit. I mean, if I put on this mask, you know, not only do for whatever I think I'm protecting myself from, you know, from you, but I'm also blocking out this God of mine. You know, I instantly am taking charge of my life. I mean, you talk about areas that I'm agnostic. So anytime I think I have to be a certain way in a certain situation, and, you know, Friday night, one of my sponsees got married, and second one of my sponsees that got married. And I got to tell you, it was like just to show up and be there and be that woman on the dance floor that people were calling Elaine. I mean, you know, it was, we just had, it was just great. And just to be me, and like, you know, and it's like, people really don't care. I mean, I, you know, like, what? I thought you were all watching everything I did at every moment, what I ate, what I said, what I drank, how I danced, what I dressed like. I mean, wow, I was so important. No wonder I was under such pressure. You know, I mean, reality check. Oh my gosh.
So anyway, the only other thing that I want to share about step five is you're going to hear things that you don't want to hear. If you have a good sponsor, your sponsor is going to, as lightheartedly as possible and as gently as possible, is going to inform you of some of your character defects that you're not aware of. My best suggestion is just write it down. You don't have to like it. You don't have to agree with it. You don't even have to. It doesn't even have to be true. Just write it down. Because we're going to go into the next step, and we're really going to look at it with God. Right? In my relationship with all of my sponsees, there's three people. There's me, my sponsee, and there's God. And I am very, very careful. I will literally say, for your consideration, I'm going to throw something out, and we're not going to talk about it for 48 or 24 hours. And you're going to go to God with it, and you're going to come back and let me know if this is appropriate or this fits or not. Because I don't get to say, but I do need to say, this is what I'm seeing. So when my sponsor, mostly Katie and I did a fourth step that was called an extended third column. So I did the first three columns and read them to her. She lives in Texas, and I read them to her over the phone. She did my fourth column. Guess how comfortable that was? You're controlling, you're emasculating, you're this is what I see, this behavior is this, and she just, get a pen. I was like, yes, ma'am. So I got a pen, and this is the same woman that took me through the work. I had 18 years, and she kept thinking I had 8, and I gave up after a while. This is the only time I impressed Katie. She did my fourth column, and I just wrote whatever down. She goes, now repeat back what you got. And I just repeated back what I'm like, well, this is what I did, and this is how I'm wrong, and this is where I'm not wrong, and this is my character defect, and then this is what I did, and this is where I'm wrong, and this is my character. She goes, you were really listening. And I was like, yes, I was. And I don't want to talk to you anymore. But be open to hear things that you don't want to hear. Remember that your sponsor has been placed in a position to tell you the truth. Listen, if you think your sponsor is there to hit you over the head or to make you feel bad about yourself, fire that human being right now and find somebody that you can trust. Because my girls don't like what I have to say. And I always find it interesting because, like, they'll call me and be like, this is what's going on. What do you think? And I'll just ask questions. I won't tell them what to do. And they're like, oh, I wanted you to tell me what to do, and I knew you wouldn't. And I'm like, well, the last time I did that, you, like, didn't talk to me for a week during your inventory. But anyway, your sponsor has placed themselves in a very vulnerable position. We're a very tight-knit group. We all know each other. So your sponsor's been put in a position to, A, keep your confidence, and to, B, tell you the truth, whether you like it or not. They're going to give you your truth as they see it. Your job is to eat it and bring it back to God and suss out what sticks for you and what doesn't. And it may not stick for you today. And the way I see it is, if you and God think that doesn't apply to me today, then that doesn't apply to you today. Doesn't mean it's not going to apply to you in your next one. But this is your experience. You're not doing this for anybody but yourself. You show up at 6:30 on a Sunday night just about every week. You do what you're supposed to do. You're not doing this for anybody other than to become the person that you want to be. And I hope to enjoy your freaking life. Yeah. I would like to wake up in the morning and stare out my window with a smile on my face. I may not like what I have to do today, but that doesn't affect the joy inside of me. That's my goal. I do not want to have a job, but if I have to have a job, I'm going to have the job I have because it's awesome. I want every single person in this room, the next time they do inventory, to walk out of their fifth step with an understanding of where they want to get to because they now know where they are. If you walk out of your fifth step more confused than when you walked in, you need to go back in and really start asking the questions that you need to ask to ascertain the information which is going to tell you, this is why I react this way. This is why I treat people this way. This is why I do this, this, and this.
Over and over and over again.
Yeah.
Like things I swear I want to stop, and I can't. The behaviors and the attitudes and inappropriate things. Yep.
We're sick.
Yeah. We are. We are.
We're so sick. And we're such creatures of habit, so just know that you've got a good set of 4 or 5. Some of us have 6 or 8. And, like, that's it. We stand by what works. So one of my big ones was just cutting people out of my life. Like, all of them. I had, like, nobody left.
All over.
Yeah. All over again.
Yeah, no harm in that. They're just gone.
They're just gone. They're just have any resentment. I just got rid of them.
And there's also something that feels very good about just doing what is suggested that you do, and that you are working your program. You know, we have a book that is our solution, and it tells us if we do this, there are promises that come. I mean, and they're pretty awesome, kick-ass promises, and that I get to live happy and free. So, I mean, there's just that part, too, of whether, you know, it doesn't, you know, have, I don't know, if you don't see halos or, I don't know, whatever you think you're supposed to have after your fifth step or, you know, just the part of just doing what it is suggested that I do, and that there's other people that have done it, and they have what I have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, not doing the comparison, because I always thought that, you know, I mean, there was supposed to be, I don't know, bands waiting for me, and, you know, parties, and just for doing what I was supposed to be doing, you know, right? I was supposed to get some kind of award for that, but there's a feeling of just suiting up and showing up and doing what is asked of me, that, you know, that it's almost like the simplistic things, because my life was nothing about that. My life was nothing about just being and accepting and doing. You got to be kidding.
So here's the fifth step promises. Once we have taken this step, withholding nothing, we are delighted. We can look the world in the eye. I'm on page 75, second full paragraph. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease, which, by the way, is my favorite thing in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but we begin to have a spiritual experience. That feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. We will feel we are on the broad highway walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe. And I can tell you that, like, it takes me a long time to connect in with people. But usually by time I get into the fifth step, like this part of the process, it's meeting on a very deep and vulnerable and soft area. Which I think if I didn't have this process, I don't think I'd ever be able to connect in with other people. I really don't. I've learned how to connect in through this process. And in that fifth step, I remember sitting with Cass during my first fifth step, feeling warm and cozy. That's not something that happens for me.
Mm-hmm.
But
that's how I felt on your couch Saturday morning. We had a meeting over at Beth's house. And that was like just, if you have, I mean, like just to be safe. And at ease, and yeah, and that happens through this process.
Yeah,
and those promises. I mean, and it's a broad highway. It's not some skinny little one lane. Mm-hmm. You know, only you get to go, or you have to wait your turn, or anything. I mean,
there's
you know.
Hierarchy. There's no.
Mm-mm.
We're just all here.
Yeah.
Like what an amazing. I can tell you. Like I don't know. Maybe I'm rambling on a lot. I kind of feel like I'm rambling on a lot tonight. But I'm so grateful for peace and ease after the 3 days or 4 days, whatever it was that I had this week. Like I had the opportunity. I was really mad about it until this evening. But I really did. I had the opportunity to really experience what untreated alcoholism feels like in my head. Mm-hmm. And anybody that's more than, what, 10 years sober maybe, that starts to slip. You don't really, like, you don't remember as well as you think you do. But But I can tell you that I attacked every circle of my life in my head over 3 days. I was ready to quit my job or figure out how to get fired over the next 6 months. I couldn't connect in with my – I was faking it till I made it all frickin' week. And I even screamed at my husband. Like, not got bitchy with him, but literally, like, screamed at him. And immediately afterwards, I went downstairs and I was like, I am so sorry. I cannot control my behavior right now. This is not who I am. And he goes, I know. He goes, it's pretty funny, though. I'm like, well, I'm glad you see it that way. He goes, you'll get through this. We're home all week. Everything's going to be fine. You will get through this. But the voice that came out of my mouth when I literally scolded him,
the beast,
was the beast. And it's not often we get to hear our own beast. And I can tell you, it was very, very unnerving. And it's still unnerving. So I don't know. I think we're all very, very lucky that we get to sit in this room. I think I'm pretty good with gratitude on the regular basis, but please don't ever mistake this for anything other than a freaking miracle. We get to be here. You get to be miserable when you sit down and write your inventory, and you get to suck it up and make amends. You get to pay all that money back. You get to be poor. You get to be unhappy. You get to cry. You get to be depressed. You get to. Because if you have the same disease that I have, trust me, you get to do everything that you do.
My father, who used to think I spent too much time in the program and my life was all AA and I wasn't balanced and, you know, no codependency in our family. But on his deathbed, he asked to see each of us kids one at a time, and his dying wish for me was to stay in AA because it was the only thing that gave him his daughter back. And, you know, we had his slow, horrible death for a year. So, I mean, we got to talk about death and dying and all this. And he said to me many times, you know, I wish I could go to some meetings, you know. I mean, he didn't really understand it. Go to some meetings, write some stuff, call somebody on the phone, and get to live my life. I don't get that option, Karen. You do. And he's right. I mean, he's right. So whatever I used to think, you want me to trust a God that's going to, you know, give a mother with small children a disease that, you know, is chronic? I mean, that's how I used to feel. Now I can look at it and say, oh, my gosh, you know, I haven't given a way out. What I have, there's a way out. I mean, how blessed am I? So I agree with that. I need to, you know, stay in that and remember that, so... So instead of going into go home and take out your book, step six, right?
We're going to six or seven.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, in there.
That's it. Thanks for the share.